really fascinating lyrics when you think about it. You know, the song is actually titled Pride in the Name of Love. And, you know, when it comes to difficult people, when it comes to difficult relationships, when it comes to just the things that we go after in life, it's amazing how many times we say we're going after something in the name of love, and it's really not love, is it? I mean, we're very passive-aggressive people. We like to go after things in the name of one thing: I win. We like to win, don't we? Anybody like to win in here? Those of you without your hands up, you are lying and you are losers. If your hand wasn't up, you're a loser, right? No, I didn't really say that. You know, we like to win. I mean, we like to come to that place where, you know, we deal with people, and yet, you know, we like to hear other people's sides, but we like to win. And oftentimes our pride gets in the way of us creating win-win scenarios because we want our way. We want to be right. And so today we're wrapping up this series titled Difficult People. And one look at what it means to be the kind of people that are win-win people. What does it mean for us to not just, you know, employ a couple tactics, but how do we become, at the core of who we are, people that are always seeking the win? And as we talk about our coworkers today, as we talk about, you know, engaging this in the workplace, I want to be really clear. This is more, what I'm talking about today is more geared toward those of us that are dealing with difficult coworkers, and this is somebody who you don't have control over the fact that they're sitting next to you. All right, if you're a boss, which I know we have a number of bosses here, a number of CEOs, people who run the business, you've got a whole nother set of criteria to deal with difficult people on, all right, which includes firing at times. And we're not really going to get into that today, but that's for another time. But I want to look at, well, you know, what do I do in those moments where, man, there's just somebody I'm like, just constantly, they constantly struggle relationally with them. How do I engage when I wouldn't choose them? They're kind of like family. You don't choose who your family is. Often you don't choose, unless you're the boss, who your coworkers are. Because, you know, the reality is, whether it's a coworker, whether it's a boss, whether your work environment is a classroom, maybe you're a student. You know, the reality is there are difficult people in all of these places. And at one point or another, you and I decide, we're like, you know, we're rational people. I'm just going to have a conversation with them. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to just, you know, try to get this thing kind of laid out and figured out. And we're going to move on. And one of the things you might realize is, as soon as you begin to do this, you get the cutoff. Anybody got the cutoff before? Cutoff's like, you know, where you go and you begin a dialogue with this difficult person, and all of a sudden they cut you off. You know, they don't like what you're saying, so they just kind of begin to resist you, and it's like you see them later in the day and they make eye contact with you and then look down and walk on by without saying anything. You got cut off right there. That's their way of dealing with this scenario. Or maybe you've experienced someone called the make fun of her. Anybody ever experienced the make fun of her? The person who, like, when you're in the office and you confront them on something and they immediately are like, oh, well, you know, so what you're saying is, like, you know best, you're always right, oh, you're the boss. You're the boss. And so every time you're in dialogue, you're just trying to have regular working dialogue with them. Anytime you throw out a suggestion, they begin to make fun of you. They're like, oh yeah, you know, so and so, Kurt, he thinks he knows everything. He thinks he calls the shots around here. And it kind of becomes this sarcastic making fun of you. Anybody experienced that before? Oh, one honest person. All right. Does anybody else experience these things? I mean, my staff is full of these. Not really. My staff is not full of these things. No. Maybe you've experienced the boomerang. The boomerang is, you know, where you go and you're like, I'm going to have an honest conversation with this person. You go to address a problem with this difficult person, and somehow in the midst of the conversation, they turn it around and it becomes your problem. They're like, you know, I'm only this way because of you. And you walk away thinking, man, I came to identify this problem, and now I've got a problem. They're saying I'm the problem. And it's like they just spun it. I'm really good at this, by the way, in case you're, I know this one really well. I try to not engage that, but, you know, probably many of us are good at this. We don't like to accept when maybe we're the one being difficult. Or maybe you've experienced the bomb. Or I also call this one the upchucker. This is a person who, you know, whenever things get difficult and you address something with them, they just explode. They explode and they get all volatile and they just kind of go off and let everybody know what they think. And the reason I call it upchuck, it's kind of like somebody puking all over you. You get covered in all kinds of stuff and then they feel great afterwards. They're like, oh man, it was good to get that out. And then you're left with all kinds of residue and problems to then sift through afterwards. And it's simply a tactic to deflect having to take responsibility for something. And let me be honest, the last kind of person, there's all kinds of people, but this is the last one I'll talk about, because I struggle with this one, the drama. Anybody have a drama person in your office? oh, you know, I don't deal well with drama. My staff knows, like, I don't deal well with drama. I mean, the moment you begin crying with me, I kind of get, like, real cold-hearted. All right? I mean, this is the person who, whenever you confront them, you know, you're trying to have a conversation, they immediately begin to well up and hyperventilate, and their breathing patterns change, and they're, like, doing this number, and, you know, and you're, I'm like, okay, let's stop. Take your time. When you get done, just let me know. We're gonna finish this after you're done crying. If you need to step out, feel free. I don't deal well with this. I don't like the drama. It's a very manipulative way. Now, I'm not saying there aren't times where somebody's really dealing with something, but not when it's in response to how we deal with conflict or difficult situations. And the reality is, we have many of these people we interact with every day, in addition to more. And this has to do with something. In fact, I read an article this past week from Career Builder, and it talked about EQ, or emotional intelligence, the emotional quotient or emotional intelligence. Here's what it said. It said, according to a new Career Builder survey, 71% of human resources managers say they place more emphasis on emotional intelligence, a person's ability to control his or her emotions, sense the emotions of others, and build relationships than they do on IQ. Which means you can be an incredibly intelligent person, but if you don't know how to deal appropriate with people, if you are that difficult person, you may be passed up for a job. 59% of employers even said they wouldn't hire someone who had a high IQ but a low EI or EQ, emotional quotient. You know, there's something here. You know, here's one of the realities. When you and I deal with difficult people, it can be dangerous. This is why employers don't want to hire people with low emotional quotients. It's very dangerous. Because, you know, we all know how it goes. You try to engage someone, you try to have a conversation with someone that's difficult. And you know why you try to do that? Because you're trying to fix them. You're saying, man, there's something about them. If I could just give a little advice to them, if I could kind of hone this in them, if I could help them change a little bit, then maybe, you know, maybe things would be better. But here's the deal. Here's a huge piece of advice this morning, which I don't usually give advice. Difficult people are called difficult people for a reason, all right? If you don't understand that, they are difficult for a reason. It's not usually a one-time thing. This is like who they are. And so, you know, we say, man, I'm going to talk to them in hopes of making it better. And what do? It ends up making it worse. Yeah. And we end up with all kinds of results and damage and pain and frustration that otherwise we wouldn't have had. So this morning, I want to take a look at make some observations of dealing with difficult people in the office. And as we do this, I'm going to tell you, you're going to sit there and you're going to nod because that's what you do in church, right? You're like, oh yeah, Kurt, that's great. Man, I love that. I'm going to tell you, these are not going to be popular today. I'm just going to tell you right up front, you're not going to like these. All right, you're not going to be jumping up and down saying, oh, woo, I get to go do this tomorrow. All right, and so we're just going to go at this, how to create win-wins. And this isn't just advice and tips. This is how do I become the person, embody this, how's God grow me to a place where I am a creating win-win person? And so here's the first one. You're going to love it. Listening to difficult people can help you avoid unnecessary pain. All right? See, I told you it was going to be great. You're going to love this. Listening to difficult people can help you avoid unnecessary pain. You see, here's the problem with this. If I can just be real for a moment, I have a problem with this because I like to talk. All right? So when I'm talking to people, anybody really, difficult people, here's how it used to go for me. I'd be looking at you and nodding just long enough for you to think I was listening to you. And as soon as there was a break in the conversation and I kind of had something I came up with in my mind, kind of a cool way to share my advice or input to you, I would quickly jump in and I would give that to you without hearing you all out. Let me be honest, this is not listening. All right, this is not listening. That's not what Jesus modeled when Jesus was listening to people. And we have to ask ourselves, do I really know how to listen? Do I know how to listen to someone that I'm just talking to? Do I know how to listen to a difficult person? Because if we're honest, we rarely really want to hear a difficult person out. And you know, and it's sad, but it wasn't until I was like in my mid-30s that I really understood what it meant to truly listen to someone. I mean, things like looking at you in the eyes and like listening and attentively watching you as you're sharing with me. You know, things like not thinking of my response while you're talking. Things like, you know, asking a follow-up question to understand more instead of just jumping in with a little bit of advice. You know, and I've learned that there are some skills to listening, and I've also learned that just because I'm listening, that doesn't mean I'm agreeing with you, but I'm trying to engage, I'm trying to understand where you're coming from. And this is really important because let's be honest, you and I, we're more often interested in being right in a scenario, winning, being right, than we are in understanding where someone is coming from. You know, this is probably one of the most embarrassing direct ways this played out in my life a few years ago. Julie and I went out to breakfast one morning, pre-kids, and we were sitting, and you know, I'm usually a coffee drinker, but I wanted juice that morning. So you're looking through the menu, and I said to Julie, I'm like, hey, I want one of these right here. I think I want a carafe of juice, because I'm a phonetic speller. And so, you know, and she's like, well, Kurt, I've never heard of one of those before. What is that? I'm like, well, it's right here. It says carafe, and I want orange juice. She said, no, I don't think that's how you say that. So we started this little argument because I thought I was right, of course. And it took me about 10 years of marriage to figure that one out. And so when the waitress came to the table, she, you know, came and said, hey, my name's so-and-so, you know, can I take your order? I said, well, that would be great, but we've got an argument going on. She kind of stiffened up. And I said, would you be willing to kind of mediate and resolve this for us? And she stiffened up a bit more. And I said, here's the deal. This right here, we're arguing over how to say this word right here. She said, oh, that's easy. It's carafe. And I said, of course, see, Julie, carafe, just like I told you. I mean, it was like the most direct, blatant, like I completely didn't hear what she said because I didn't want to hear it. I thought I was right, and it made me look bad. And I did it for like 7 more years after that before I figured out I had to listen. See, here's the deal. If we're honest, we don't listen well. And we especially don't listen well when it comes to difficult people. Like, take a look at Proverbs. You know, Proverbs is this book in the Old Testament that's literally just wisdom. It's this wisdom writer, you know, just saying, hey, here's how to live. If you want to live a wise life and reduce pain in your life, here's how to live. He says, he who answers before listening, that is his folly and shame. Now, when I read that, I thought, we don't use the word folly anymore, right? What's folly? Is that like jolly? I mean, what does folly mean? Let me give you like a common person's description of folly. It means stupid, all right? It means he who answers before listening, that is his stupidity and his shame. That's what I did with the carafe. And so, you know, the writer says, hey, you need to listen before you answer. And let me be honest, you know, when we're listening to a difficult person, we rarely want to hear them out. Rarely do we want to really listen to understand. We just kind of in our minds are getting our arguments ready so we can squash them as soon as they take a breath. Take a look at James, another writer in the New Testament. This is what he says. He talks about this. In fact, he says, my dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone, and let me stop right there a second, because everyone's a fascinating word here. Who, by the way, is everyone? Just curious what that means to you. Who is everyone? Are you like nudging your wife, your spouse, going, hey, everyone? You know what everyone means to me? Everyone means everybody else but me. That's what everyone means. It means, you know, yeah, I'm thinking of 10 people right now in the last week that need to hear what this says right here. Somehow, everyone is everyone else except me. So as you hear this, I want you to not think of everyone else. Think only of you. Take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And yet, you know what the American pastime is? Quick to text, quick to tweet, quick to update my status. Somebody hacks me off. Somebody, you know, I immediately share with everyone how somebody just wronged me. I mean, this is how the American way is. And let's be honest, the only person ever that had any right to be quick to anger, had quick to speak, quick to judge, is who? Jesus, right? It's God. I mean, this is God. Jesus is God in the form of flesh and love. This is he's the one who helped put everything into motion that you and I experience every day. He's the one that knows your thoughts before you ever think them. He's the one that's omnipresent. He's present in every situation that we're ever in. And yet, you know what Jesus does time and time again when he encounters difficult people? We see it time and time again. Jesus stops, and here's what he says. He says, what is it that you would have me do? And then he just listens. And now listen, listening to somebody doesn't mean you agree with them. It just means you're trying to hear where they're actually coming from. And what happens here is when you and I listen to difficult people, we actually begin to see where they're blinded. You realize people that are difficult are usually blinded. They're usually unself-aware of how their actions are impacting people around them. You know, we teach our children this, right? I mean, we teach them to cross the road. What do you say? You know, go up to the road, and then you stop, you look, and you listen, right? So this last week, I'd got my older two kids on the bus, and 3 days a week, I'd take off on a jog in my smoking hot pink running stroller with my two daughters in it. And I load them in the stroller, and I've got, you know, one earphone in on my iPod, listen to something, and one ear out, you know, so I can kind of be attentive to what's going on around me. And I, you know, and we go on a couple miles up, a couple miles back. As we kind of get back to my street, I realize, man, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm going to run a little bit further, and I'm running along a street that's a boulevard, which means it has a median in the middle. And so I run about another quarter mile. I'm really engaged in what I'm listening to. I'm obviously running against the grain of traffic, and so I see there's no traffic coming my way. I immediately begin to cut across the median, and as I turn to go the other way, literally, I push my daughters out as a car is coming toward them, pull them back, and I just, in like a moment of time, keep them from getting hit. You know why? Maggie looks up and says, "Stop, look, and listen." I didn't do that. I mean, I'm so engrossed in what I'm hearing. I just turned and I forgot to look. I forgot to actually listen. And I just about experienced unnecessary pain, not just for myself, but for my children as well. You see, something happens when we stop with a difficult person and we look. You can tell a lot from their body language. You can tell a lot from this. You can tell a lot from this. There's a lot you can pick up right away when you stop and look at them, and then you begin to listen. You can immediately begin to see a couple things. You can begin to see, you know, if there's something going on here, that they're actually going to even listen to you. See, here's the second one. When you stop, look, and listen, I guarantee you it's going to avoid unnecessary pain. Second big idea right here. And again, you're going to love this one too, is not talking, all right? Not a none, nothing. You know, when you encounter a difficult person, many times the smartest thing you can do is saying nothing at all. Now, I want to be really clear here for a moment, because I'm not talking about being weak. I'm not talking about backing down from conflict. I'm not talking about not confronting someone if something really needs to be confronted. I'm not talking about allowing injustice or bullying to take place in the workplace. That's a whole nother line. That's a whole nother message for a whole nother day. But I'm not even talking about not communicating in the office. That's very important in the office. But when you encounter somebody who's difficult, the kind of person when you see them, you're like, really? Really? I can't believe you're doing that. Do you realize how that's impacting all of us around? Sometimes the smartest thing you can do in that moment is to not say anything, to not say anything. And just for the record, this is not my idea. This is Jesus's idea, actually. Take a look at Luke chapter 23. This is gospel according to Luke. This is the eyewitness account of Jesus's life from a guy who's a physician named Luke. And he's kind of watching Jesus and writing down what he's seeing. And here's what it says. He says, "When Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased because for a long time he had been wanting to see him. From what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform some miracle. He plied him with many questions, and Jesus won the argument." Right? No, that's not what it says. It says, "He plied him with many questions, and Jesus gave him the four steps to becoming a better person so he's not so difficult." No, it doesn't say that either. "And Jesus won the argument by a passionate rebuttal, explaining all using feel statements of how this person's making me feel." No, Jesus didn't do that. What's it say there? "He plied him with many questions, but Jesus gave him no answer. The chief priests and the teachers of the law were standing there, vehemently accusing him. Then Herod and his soldiers ridiculed and mocked him." You know what I realized about difficult people? I mean, I've learned this. It's taken me a long time to learn this. Is that some people don't care what you say. Some people don't care what you say. In fact, over the summer, I was coaching my daughter's softball team, and as we got to the end of the season, there's one coach that we played against, and he called me, emailed me a couple times one day, texted me, wanted to talk to me. And even when we played against him, he's one of those guys that just was a difficult person. I mean, just, you know, argumentative over everything, sarcastic, just like to spar. I mean, just for no reason would pick something and disagree with you. And so he emails, starts texting me, he's calling me, and basically wants some feedback on a couple of my girls who tried out for the all-star travel team. And he wanted to know, you know, determine who he was going to pick. And even in that conversation, he's questioning me. He's like, "Kurt, why didn't you have more of your girls try out? Can't believe you didn't do this." And I mean, he's just a difficult person. And so, you know, we exchange call, try to be pleasant with him, you know. I thought that was the end of it. So at the end of the season, I got to coach the all-star game, which is just a one game for the girls who didn't make the all-star team, the rest of the girls that were kind of all-star players. And, you know, we have this game, and this guy shows up. And not only does he show up, but he comes and he's standing in our dugout, and he knows one of the assistant coaches I'm coaching with who's from another team, and he begins to go off. And now he knows what I do, all right? Somewhere probably we exchanged emails. I responded to him, and it had my title on the bottom of my email or something. He knows what I do. So he just kind of begins to go off with this statement. He says, can you believe it? I may not even have enough girls to play this weekend. You know, they're all saying they got to go out of town with their families or go to, like, church services or something. And, you know, I mean, who does that? I mean, come on, you made a commitment to softball. These are 8 and 9-year-olds, need to stand up and, you know, be committed to something. Why in the world, who goes to, like, church services over playing sports these days? As he looks at me and kind of smirks. Now, I've got a decision right in this moment to make, right? I've got a decision. Now, here, you know, I love sports. I played sports all through high school. I love sports. I'm not your, like, over-the-top religious holy roller kind of, like, I'm going to always be defending, you know. But I've got a decision to make right here, and here's what I did. I looked back, said, come on, girls, ready, position, let's go. Because I knew something. I knew that it would be a waste of my time to engage in this dialogue with him. It'd be a waste of my time. You know, I've got enough life experience to know that, you know, that I'm not this over-the-top religious person, but this is an argument that I don't necessarily need to have. I mean, this is going to be a waste of my time. He's not interested in hearing what I have to say. I can tell by his body language. I know from previous experience. I get that right away, and I know. I mean, there's a part of me that wanted to pull out the stops and, like, jump in 2 feet and, like, begin to engage and defend, and I know, I'm pretty good at this. I could have laid out a rational reason why those kids and their families should be in church on weekend and how softball's a great thing, but it's not, you know, everything's got its place in life. I could have gave him story after story of families' lives that get changed and how children's lives get changed and trajectories of human life get changed for the rest of eternity, and that's not happening on a softball field, as good as some things are on a softball field. I could have made him feel like a peon and put him in his place, and I would have known 2 things would have happened. One thing, he would have walked away, and potentially my other assistant coach just shaking their head saying, boy, it was another one of those bitter, mean Christians. I had a decision to make right there. And, you know, I realized this guy, he's not interested in what I have to say. He just wants a platform to spar on. He wants a platform for somebody to hear what he has to say on. And, you know, every now and then somebody will say to me, they'll be like, Kurt, you know, if you could, I've got somebody who's struggling. If you could just talk to them, then I think it could really help them. And I've kind of come up with a standard response. I'm usually like, hey, have them call me. Because what I've learned is if somebody doesn't want to talk to me about something, they usually aren't interested in what I have to say. It's just a waste of my time and theirs. There are points in dealing with difficult people where we have to evaluate and say, do they really want to know what I have to say? Sometimes the smartest thing you can do is just be silent. See, Jesus could have done that. He could have began to do what Herod wanted. I mean, as he stand before Herod, you know, Herod's like, hey, I want a miracle. Jesus understood something right there. He said, hey, if I do a miracle, it's not going to change Herod. Herod doesn't want a miracle to be changed. He just wants to be entertained. Jesus said, hey, it's a waste of my time. Herod simply wanted to just kill some time. Which, by the way, how many of you remember growing up, or maybe when you were growing up, maybe you know, your parents called you in to have, like, one of the talks, you know, you'd done something, and how many of you, like, can honestly look back at that and say, man, that talk changed my life? I mean, you know, maybe you were out drinking underage or something, and your mom and dad set you down, they're like, man, I don't want to ever see that happen again. And you're like, thank you, parents, for giving me this, the light bulb just came on. That'll never happen again. Or maybe in your workplace, you know, your boss comes in and he's like, Kurt, you know, I don't think that's going to work again right there. And you're like, thank you, boss, for helping me see that I will never be late again the rest of my time I'm employed. I mean, how many of us have honestly been changed by a talk, right? I mean, it doesn't mean we don't have them, right? But here's the last thing. You don't talk somebody into real change. People are loved into change. And this is true with difficult people. I told you you're going to love these points today. I told you, man, these are going to be really popular today. You don't talk somebody into change. You love them into change. Think about this. Think about if you have a relationship with Christ. If you've come into a life-giving relationship with Christ at some point in your life, think about how that happened. You weren't talked into that. There wasn't somebody that got up and talked you into that or manipulated you into a point where you're like, man, I just feel like I've got to do this. I mean, you know, some places do that, but ultimately, if something really stuck, it's not because somebody talked you into it. It's because you were loved into it. It was because you saw, it wasn't because somebody had great words, it's because you saw that Jesus went to the cross and you were like, wow, you know, God actually cared enough to lower himself down in the form of flesh and love so that I could have access to him and see who he really was. I could get close. I could see what his life was really about. And here's the deal. You and I have all this stuff on our shoulders, all this stuff we've accrued in life, and we're going to have to pay for that someday. And yet while I was still out accruing all this bad stuff in my life, Jesus loved me enough that he died for me so I don't have to pay the price for all that stuff. And at some point you saw that and you're like, wow, because of what I see, because I see love, I'm actually drawn into this relationship. You see, people don't change because you talk really well. People change because you love really well. You know, you've probably experienced something like this. Every now and then I go out with, you know, people, large groups of people. Sometimes it's a large group of our family. And you know, sometimes we're sitting at the table and maybe you've had this experience where somebody at your party starts treating one of the servers really bad. You know, they start complaining and kind of, you know, really grating on one of the servers. And let me tell you what, I've had friends, I've never worked in a kitchen before at a restaurant. I've had friends that have worked in kitchens though. And they've told me, they said, hey, Kurt, you know, if a server comes back and says something like, you know, I've got this wise blank, you fill in the blank, whatever word you'd put there. You know, that out at table number 31, and man, he's giving me a hard time. And, you know, my friend said, hey, the kitchen crew, man, we're on the same team. We stick up for our servers. And so, you know, if I just happen to like drop the omelet on the floor while I'm preparing it, and while it's down there, I happen to, you know, like step on it. And as I pick it up, I happen to sneeze on it and then fold it all together and put it on your plate for you, which you're never going to know. Well, that's just kind of how we roll. And that stuck in my mind. I have never forgot that. All right. So you see, when I'm in a large group of people and somebody begins to do this, you know what, I begin to like real clearly when the waitress is over by me, say, hey, just so you know, I'm not with them. Like I'm on a separate, my bill is separate, my tip is going to be separate. And I think you're doing a great job, by the way. You know, I mean, I'm very clear to try to separate myself from that. And you might say, well, Kurt, why would you do that? I mean, they're getting paid for that. They should do that. They should be nice to you. They should prepare your food the way you want it prepared the first time. They should never make any mistakes. That's what they're paid for. You know, you and I both know, yes, that's how it should go. But we honestly, we know that's not how it always goes, right? Take a look at another statement from the book of wisdom, Proverbs. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. God says, hey, when you need to deal with a difficult person, he says a gentle, loving response is always better in any given situation. Listen. You know, when I'm sitting there with that server, I mean, I'll be like, hey, you know, this is how my food came out. I don't know if I missed something or you missed something. I probably told it to you wrong, but is there any way this could be like done differently? I mean, I know you're really busy and you got 100 different requests right now. You're serving a lot of tables, been on your feet all day. Really appreciate everything you're doing, but is there any way that maybe I could make it this way? A gentle answer always goes over better. You know why I do that? Because I don't want a whole bunch of nasties on my plate. Right? Now, we laugh about that, right? Because we get that in the restaurant scene. But for some reason, when we get into the office and we're interacting with a coworker, or we're interacting with our boss or a client on the phone or a customer, man, we forget this. We forget that a gentle answer always is better in any given situation. You know, I want to close with a story about Gideon. You know, usually I close telling you some story, some mistake I made in life or something, but I want to talk about Gideon. Gideon was somebody from the Old Testament, and you know, he's this guy back from the book of Judges, and he has a fascinating story because, you see, Gideon was a guy that was living in an area that was just oppressed. I mean, they had this army, this group of people around them that were just oppressing his people, and people were taking their crops, people were taking their food, taking everything they had. I mean, they were living a very desperate life. I mean, they were very oppressed, and they were robbing from them, they were stealing from them. They had literally nothing. They were destitute. In fact, it even says that Gideon was found in the cellar one day, stomping on some wheat just simply to get the grains of wheat so he could go and make some bread. I mean, this is how destitute they were. And one day God says to Gideon, he's like, hey, Gideon, it's time to change this. I want your people to have a decent life. I'm going to rout this group of people. I'm just going to kind of clean house on them, and I'm going to do it through you. And so God created this victory through him. And Gideon had like an army of like 20,000 men, but he said, Gideon, that's way too many. I want you to reduce it down. So we reduced it down to about 300 soldiers. He said, I'm going to take these 300 soldiers. You're going to rout this group of people that are just keeping you guys destitute. And they had like tens of thousands of soldiers. So, I mean, it was this really big victory that God brought about. And so as this happened, of course, they began celebrating after they routed this group of people and got their dignity back and began to have kind of normal life. And there was this other group of Jewish people that saw this, and they're like, oh man, we didn't get invited to the party. How's come we're not a part of this? And they started getting kind of angry or agitated. And so take a look at what it says here in Judges 8. It says, now the Ephraimites asked Gideon, why have you treated us like this? And let's be honest, Gideon was like, what are you talking about? Why have you treated us like this? I mean, have you not noticed for like the last 20 years, we've been like destitute and you haven't ever stood up and done anything? I mean, you had the power to kind of clean house here, but you didn't. I mean, God finally raised me and my army up and we knocked these tens of thousands of soldiers, you know, out so we could like reclaim our dignity. But you want to know why like we didn't like reach out to you? Come on, you could have done something and you didn't. And take a look at what Gideon says right here. He says, why have you treated us like this? Why didn't you call us when you went to fight Midian? And they criticized him sharply. So Gideon attacked them and criticized them. No, it doesn't say that, does it? It doesn't say Gideon didn't pull out like a big oversized Bible and start like holy thumping them over the head. No, what does it say there? It says, but he answered them, what have I accomplished compared to you? Aren't the gleanings of Ephraim's grapes better than the full grape harvest of the place where they were living? God gave Oreb and Zeeb, the Midianite leaders, into your hands. What was I able to do compared to you? At this, their resentment against him subsided. And here's the question. Here's what Gideon knew. Here's what we're discovering. When we listen to difficult people, instead of just cutting them off, when we actually listen to where they're coming from, it prevents unnecessary pain. In those moments where maybe we just realize they don't want to hear what I have to say, it's just a waste of my time. You know, Gideon, he didn't talk. He didn't like lay out the history of why they were doing what they did. He just simply gave a gentle, loving answer. And it says the resentment subsided. So you take a look at those three things right there. You know, what's the one that you really need to begin to embody? You know, with your coworker, that difficult person, whoever that is that you work with, that maybe you just really struggle with in your office setting, whatever that might be for you. Why don't you take out your connection card that we filled out earlier this morning, and on the back are some next steps. And every week here at Crosspoint, we're really big on giving you some tangible, hey, you know, we take this stuff in, we nod our heads, but what am I going to do? What's my next step? These are the three next steps. I'm saying, you know, what of these three things, as you think about your work environment, your difficult people you're going to encounter this week, what's the step I need to take? Not just as a tip saying, oh, I'm just going to go do this a little bit, but I really need to embody. Do I need to become a better listener? Do I begin to need to maybe at times just not say anything? Do I need to really work on being a person of gentleness in my answer? Think through that for a moment and say, you know, this is my step this week. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to grow in my interactions with this person.